Hello and welcome to Michael and Ivanka's Grand Podcast, a weekly podcast where the two of us, cool dudes, think to try and figure out what we think about everything in the world. My name's Michael Forrest.
And I'm Ivanka Magic.
And she's Ivanka Magic. And this week we are going to talk about pessimism versus optimism. What's better? Who would win in a fight? The pessimist or the optimist? Who would be the coolest friend?
Good question. I was thinking about this a second ago. Literally a second ago.
Literally?
I think I'll describe myself as an optimist with a very active imagination for things that can go wrong.
I see. I think I see.
We'll see.
Yes. Okay. I think I'm very good at being... at finding the negative thing. Like, that was kind of my knee-jerk react. My default for most of my young life was to spot the negative in absolutely anything. I was very good at, like, finding some problem with just about anything, which seemed to get on people's nerves sometimes, once in a while, and I did think maybe that's not a great way to be. And I do believe in the power of... The trouble is, if you think everything's terrible and that nothing's ever going to get any better, then you miss all the chances that might... You miss all the opportunities that might emerge that would help you achieve some slightly more positive vision. So I guess I am largely pretty optimistic.
Yeah, I think in your description of you finding the wrong in things, I'm not sure that's pessimism. Pessimism in my head is believing that it will all end badly.
Right.
Whereas I'm not sure anybody, never mind, this is what we can discuss. Can you live being truly pessimistic? Because then what's the point?
Yeah, why be a pessimist?
Why be a pessimist? I mean, by all means, see all the things that could and will go wrong, but, you know, if I wasn't optimistic that something good could be done, I personally would struggle to do anything.
Yeah, and that is the depression. Anyway, so if that hooks you in to an exciting podcast episode, then stay tuned. Ready for this, Ivanka. I think I'm just feeling it. Anyway, so how are you doing? How was your week? It's been 2 weeks.
It's been 2 weeks.
Because you had a visitor last week and we skipped a week.
Yes. My brother visited and it was my birthday.
Happy birthday!
I'm now 47.
Wow.
How about that, eh? 47.
That's
a very big girl.
You're running up on that 50, but hey, look, you've achieved a lot, so you're in a good position.
And look at
me,
I've got bare arms.
Bare arms.
How brave! How brave am I?
I haven't got bare arms.
Despite Facebook advertising to tell me that I'm not ready for bare arms, but I can be with 4 weeks of whatever they're selling me. Yes, so I had a birthday. My brother visited, which is lovely and was lovely. We had a great time and talked about many things, and. He was, you know, it's good having my brother around. My brother's I'm close to him. He's a bit younger. He's a very gentle soul but a huge giant physically. And my husband and he are friends because they knew each other before. They set me up. So it's always very nice having them around. And he's very nice with my daughter and took her out and was very uncle-y, took full... No, I'm taking her out. We are going out together. We don't need you. So that was very nice. Yeah. And we made the effort, because he was only here for 5 days, made the effort to do lots of things. Mm. So that's good. My birthday was kind of, you know, a birthday. It was a Monday. It wasn't the headline of the week, to be honest. Tommy visiting was the headline. Mm. And then my mum is also back, and she came with a friend, so it's all been very sociable.
Okay.
Back for a couple of weeks. She had a holiday first with her friend, and now she's come here for a bit. Mm. And I have found a new person to massage my sore shoulder.
Right.
He's not just massage, he's some physio dude who is seems quite an optimistic person, or at least certainly confident. But he also, I was very happy to, you know, so I just met him on an intro from a couple of other people, and he unprompted by me, had a go about people who are not vaccinating themselves against COVID. So I was like, I like you.
It's a low bar in this world, though, isn't it?
It is. It should be, but it doesn't. It doesn't seem to be. It seems to be, you know, some anyway. But yes, so he was all right, despite his, you know, Croatian masculine. I can sort this out one session, and it will all be fine. Mm. Yeah. You know, I was quite pleased that he was very surprised to find that I was in my 40s and not my 30s.
Always so good. There you go.
It helps. Always not that helps. I really care. I kind of take this whole aging thing. I've never been overly worried about these kind of birthdays and collecting them. But one does become more aware of one's own mortality, maybe also one's body not being quite as resilient as it once was, those kind of things. And then the bad news this week, dishwasher's broken. My birthday week and there's been no dishwasher. And the man apparently is coming tomorrow, but these are the things, you know, the price you pay for being on an island is the lack of instant response to your crises. So I phoned them up and I was like, I really need you to come, it's my birthday, you can't possibly expect me to wash up on my birthday. And they said, well, maybe not you, but someone else could be washing up. So that was the big news. Oh, and it's rained.
It rained.
There you go. So I think that's a good summary. How are you, Michael?
I'm good. Yeah, I think like last time we talked, I think I'll tell you about a little experiment that I did, and I thought it was quite good. But you know, I was like looking for, what's my hobby? What's my spare time? What do I do in my downtime? And I thought, why don't I play some music but not time it on Dungood, not record my activity in my database? So the advantage of obsessively tracking every minute of my time means that the fact that I'm not doing that and I'm doing something technically makes that play time, because I can't account for it.
Because you can't explain what you did.
So I'll tell you the outcomes. I was used this Endless app. I had a little, some jams on there, and I sort of joined the, I was talking on the Discord, and I got a couple of people kind of looking at what I was doing, and I made some little friends I know, I don't wish, I hate how that came out, because they're just like names on the thing. I made some friends on the Discord, it's just sort of found some like-minded souls, and just by sort of playing some music with each other in this strange asynchronous world of Endless. But then what happened was, I was like, oh, I want to be able to, this reminds me of, because you record these loops, it's an app where you can sort of like, you play some music into it and then you press the thing and it traps that as a loop and kind of loops in, and if someone else does the same, that sort of comes into your jam as well. But it's got a bit of a feeling of like jams, it's sort of fun to be part of the jam, but to be honest, it's not that fun to listen to. It's like, you know, it's like feels good to do, but not that fun to listen to. But I was like, what I want to do is like take some of the loops out of this and put them into my infinite music machine algorithm. So I came up with this idea of, I came up with a name for it last week called, because Endless has three S's at the end, I was like, I need something with three N's at the end. So I came up with Rhythn, which is RITHNNN.app. So that I got that domain name, which will basically be a thing you can export out the loops. But basically, what the long and short of it is, I just in my not timing my work, I ended up starting another goddamn app, didn't I? because I just cannot help myself. I just can't help myself. I spent nearly all of last weekend working on this goddamn app, and I did a stream. on Sunday and worked on it and then got completely stuck on some nonsense. And it's like, this is why we don't start new apps, Michael. But I want it, but I'm not working on it on my work time. I'm working on it in my spare time. But it's just, can I just not do something that's not building an app, please? I just was supposed to be playing some music with some friends. So I don't know.
Then you, yeah, I don't know.
There's this thing though, like if I play the jams, then the trouble, the more other people join in, the more the stems to export get pushed down the list, and then eventually they go off unless you pay for a subscription. So it's like, I want to be able to at least have an MVP version of this new app that means I can just go, oh, that was a cool bit, export it out and bring it in, and then later I'll kind of like fiddle with all the details and like figure out how to make it playback. But it's just like, immediately I've found something I have to build before I can go and have fun again, which is the story of my goddamn life.
Maybe this will be another, like, I've forgotten completely what your app's called.
Shoot.
With the Windows app.
Yeah, Shoot Clean Camera. Thing is, it could be, and like, there's already, like, I've got a community that would be interested in it, and I've found another community that's sort of made a thing like it, and it's like, it's, and I think the best ideas come out of this sort of thing, but it's like, Michael,
this is not what you're supposed to be doing right now.
Can you just try and
stop starting a new thing?
Stop starting
a new thing. It's very hard, though, if you have ideas.
Yeah,
I get inspired.
They're
the best bit. Yeah. That's the optimism bit. It's like, yeah.
I can make this in 5 minutes.
I'm gonna make it.
No, you can't. Nothing ever takes 5 minutes. All right, clip time.
Pessimism
versus optimism. Optimism, do we need to, what do we mean by optimism?
Do we need to Google them?
No, let's not Google them, but let's just, like, you can be an optimist, so that, like, but there's this thing of, like, can we not just be optimistic about some things and pessimistic about some things? Do we really have to identify as one or the other? I've started with a big swing.
It's like, do I have to let my optimism or pessimism define who I am or be part of my personality? I think, for me personally, I think optimism often takes more work.
That's true, because maybe. I have maybe definite some yes ands for that, which I will wait until you complete your thought.
Because I think that, in the face of some things in this world, it can be very hard to look out into the tangled future and work out where the story ends well. And in order to do that, in fact, I think I end up focusing on the very near term. Like, well, I'm going to have a nice lunch today. But is that the same? Is hopeful the same as optimistic?
No, I think it's the same thing. Yeah. But that you're sort of, that was almost a line out of the book I'm listening to at the moment called, what's it called? Essentialism. I'm listening to this book
Essentialism.
Which is about only doing the essential things. But he was talking about how we don't really define our long-term goals. We don't necessarily have a clear vision about those, but people are much clearer about their short-term goals, about what this latest deadline. Like, people are very clear on that, but often people aren't very good at coming up with what the bigger idea is, with what the kind of the vision is, really.
I think
because it's hard work.
It's hard. Well, it's hard, and it's very hard at the moment. I think it's especially hard at the moment because of COVID for the whole world, because of climate change for the whole world, but in the UK because of Brexit.
There's
three things. We're living in a world where Brexit has been kind of masked by COVID. But Britain is pretty going through some very tricky times. So, you know, from a sort of big, big ticket item planning, jobs, future, business ideas, development, blah, 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 that's become really hard.
Yeah. And it's like, I know that there are things, there's a certain kind of load of things that I want to do, and all of them are contingent on me having some sort of EU citizenship. So I, all for Sharon, British citizenship, so that she can like leave for a bit without getting like pretty patelled on the way back in, kind of thing.
pretty patelled.
So these sort of short term nonsense can like end up like completely clouding, and because we're always in the thick of the short term nonsense, it can be like, again, yeah, as
yeah,
you say,
I suppose short term. Yeah, I suppose those things are still short term. They're a few short years ahead.
Well, it's like dealing with the consequences of the permanent change. But
things like, I don't know, you know, the effect of. Well, let's think about if I think about some projects at work. I can't remember what your actual question was.
we're talking about being defined as optimist or pessimist, but forget about that.
I think sort of taking pessimism as a, it's not pleasant being around some, I don't enjoy, let me put it, let's not generalize. I personally don't enjoy being around pessimistic thinking, because
it's true. As it relates to my initial question, it's like people sort of come across one way or another, you know, whether or not you self-identify, like people, you're going to be like, it's a pessimist.
Yeah. I mean, I can be really like, yeah, I mean, I've been on projects recently, off frequently been on projects with people. You pretty quickly work out, oh God, we're going to have to sit through this sort of arrogant narcissist thing. Man-child thing, and then you usually find another senior woman, and you have another chat, and you sort of go, oh God, but one has to hope that this person is going to transcend their current status and actually prove us wrong. You know, I'd like to be wrong. There's often I'd like to be wrong, and I maybe that's optimistic as well. It's like the openness to being wrong about things that you know often end badly, but then that's also how you get covered in hives.
But it's definitely the difference between an inexperienced, like me as an inexperienced young developer. Like I'm definitely, because I don't know all the million ways it can go wrong. I will just launch myself into something and then end up working really late and it takes longer. But then it's sort of like it's that naivety that a lot of businesses exploit. They like exploit that dynamo, and while it's better to just say no to a project that you can now see ahead of you, like you still sometimes, if you want it, you sort of want to be proved wrong, like, oh, I wish I had that naivety of youth that would let me jump into this thing. But then I guess I have, because I just jumped into a new thing. So yeah, want it. And I think sometimes it's like, I want to say no to this project. Is it because I'm so experienced and I can predict that it's going to be a negative outcome, or is it just because I don't want to, because it seems rubbish?
Yeah. Like, rubbish project. Yeah, I mean, I think it's I think though, like, you know, I've definitely talked about this on podcast before, but this whole idea that when we are under threat or feeling, you know, in our sort of fight or flight, our thinking narrows, so that sort of negative pessimistic way of thinking isn't conducive to having creative ideas.
No, not at all.
And it doesn't help, it doesn't really help you get out of a bad situation. Yeah. It just compounds the situation, really.
Yeah.
And you burrow harder into the mess.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't think of. So, you know, sitting next to somebody going, oh, you know, like, I mean, take our motorcycle trip. So many, many people told us we were going to get killed in Mexico. So many people at all levels of society, like, why would you do that? You're going to die. And you know, whilst that didn't stop us doing the trip, it did mean that as we entered into Mexico, and certainly for the first couple of weeks, we were pumping adrenaline in the strain, like we were afraid. And not, it didn't stop me acting, but maybe I spent more time than I would have doing risk analysis. And maybe that's good, and maybe that's the right thing, and maybe we didn't get shot because we did the extra risk analysis. I don't know. But, you know, that's kind of like, what happens if? What happens if? What are we going to do? So, you know, and it forced us to make some rules so that we'd be comfortable with this. So we, for example, always made sure we knew where we were staying every day and had the bike parked out of sight by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so that there was no overlap. And, you know, things like this. So it made me, you know, that sort of pessimistic, negative thinking can be useful.
Look, and the thing, the reason it's more natural, well, yes, it's horrible, but there's a reason it's more, like, but it's a survival trait. And it's, and even though I think the whole, like, Mexico, you're going to get killed is just such a sign of horrific, the effect of decades of, like, televisual propaganda on America, you know, there's just the absolute racism of it, like, is quite upsetting. But you're gonna immediately get killed because they're not human is kind of the implication. Ooh. There, and I find that pretty disgusting, but let's sort of set that aside and say, like, it's easy to be pessimistic because it's an evolutionary imperative. Like, you have to assume the worst if you hear a funny sound. Like, that could be a tiger approaching, so I need to be ready for a tiger, even though it's just something, like, rustling, and it could have been anything. And that's why, yeah, like, that's why it's harder to be positive, because there's not really as much of a survival need for it. So our brains aren't really, like, built for it in the same way. Mm.
I had this chat with my daughter the other day, because we go and jump off the pier here. It sounds big, but it's not. It's all very contained. So she said, Mummy, I keep feeling like there's a shark in the water and it's going to get me. Mm. And I was like, that's quite normal. You know, we all jump into the sea and we think there's something there. We don't know what's there and it scares us. But there isn't. So let's jump in again. It's like, it's but, you know, a little girl will say, I think that there's a, I feel like there's a shark going to come and get me. Whereas I think often when we're speaking with other adults, we're reluctant to admit that we're scared there's a shark in the sea that's going to come and get us, or we're scared that there's yet another thing we're going to fail at. So what we do is we maybe, you know, turn that fear onto things that aren't quite as real. Do you know what I mean? Like, the rustle might be something in your brain, not, I'm terrified my child's going to be snatched. I told you this, didn't I? Like, not snatched. I don't know. Like, I'll lose her. And that's like, whenever I'm always like, oh, where is she? And I think that's a natural and normal thing. But it's very, I find it really struggle to sort of, I have to, like, talk to myself. We're in a place, we know where we are, we know who's here, everything's okay. And it's like matching up real rustles from those imagined rustles that you know.
And I think there's a skill that can be cultivated, and it's something I've developed for myself, which is I am able to override I've got a thing where I'm like, that's a scary idea, it's not going to happen. Not that it's not going to happen, I'm not going to let it, like, take over. Yeah. And I think that's a thing that takes practice to get the hang of.
Yeah.
And it can be a bit infuriating being with someone that can't, like, separate themselves from the fear, from the idea. I've had this idea now, but it doesn't, just because you've had the idea and you're scared of it, it doesn't make it real. Like, you can say, okay, I accept that this is a possibility. I also look at it rationally and say, okay, there's actually, like, a very, very, very small likelihood, and if I let it overcome my whole being right now, then I'm just going to ruin everyone's day. And
I had this conversation with my brother while he was here, because he's also slightly afraid of water and imagined sharks, right? Yeah. And I said to go, let's swim over the bubbles. He goes, oh, I don't want to. It's like, are you still scared of the water? It's like, yeah. I was like, okay, anyway. So I said please don't let my daughter know that you're afraid. He went, no, I won't. I wouldn't. I've already thought about it. And then we had a conversation. I talked to him about the fact that I used to, like, have these, because we've always swum in rivers and sea, and you don't know what's underneath you. And you have this, like, a bit of seaweed. I spoke about this with a colleague who grew up sea swimming as well. A bit of seaweed touched your leg, and you're like, what is it? Run away. And you kind of can get quite panicky. And I have worked to not assume that there's a shark in the water coming to get me, because there isn't round here, for example. And I had a conversation one time with a lady who's the mother of a friend of mine who actually used to ski for Britain. She's in her 70s now. And I've learned how to ski as an adult, and I was talking to her about how hard it is. And she said, you know, that fear that you have is quite normal. She said, but any time you're on a hill anywhere, make yourself look down the hill. Imagine yourself going down the hill. Get over that, whether you're on a bicycle or walking, like step through the what's going to happen if I'm going down the hill. And I've actively sort of done that in a weird way. And it has made me a better skier, but also a better swimmer.
Yeah.
And possibly it's made me able to cope a little bit with fears of what can go wrong rearing up, and made it a bit easier for me to separate that kind of, like, because it's quite a nice discipline to go, right, I'm afraid of this, let me think it through a bit. So I completely agree that it's like it is something that you can learn to separate, but you have to work at it.
There's something I want to expand on with that ski thing, but I'm going to play a clip. Was Primrose Hill there. I was going to say, like, the thing with optimism and that, and the sort of reason that it's important is something I've heard about skiing. I'm not a skier, but something I've heard about skiing is if you are coming down a hill and you focus on the trees, you're going to hit the trees. If you focus on the line between the trees that you're going to take, then you're not going to hit the trees. But if all you're aware of is the dangers, then you're never going to, you're just going to go into them.
It's like, totally. If you ride a bike, right, you look where you're going. You don't look at what you want to avoid.
Yeah.
You know, and I had this on a CBT test for a motorcycle, which I didn't enjoy. I didn't do the test because I didn't enjoy the whole day. But the guy goes, you got to look where you want to go and not look at the fence. Going, and so it's totally true. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
If you do focus on the trees, you are going to hit them.
You're going to hit a tree.
I don't ski trees, though. I'm not good enough for that.
My driving instructors, I don't know if that's the... Because I'm sort of three lessons in. I'm really enjoying this. This guy's...
Oh, nice. He's got a new person.
He knows how to, like, not... like engage my sensitivity. He just sort of stays calm, stays cool, and plus I'm driving an automatic, so it's just so much easier. But he's got this thing, like, so we go through these narrow roads and he says, like, there's the cars coming towards you, but, like, you've got to sort of, like, pay more attention to the car on your left with the doors of the cars, and actually, like, be a bit more towards the oncoming traffic and to sort of give space on the left and sort of be focused a bit more on the left side. But I don't know if that's, like, looking at the trees or if that's because the oncoming traffic is also, because I think, like, you should look at the line really more than the thing. But if I know that the line has got to sort of avoid car doors, I think that's actually the secret for me. But
yeah, unfortunately with driving, I would say it's like it's the hazards, but as you're a cyclist, you're probably more aware of the hazards than most drivers.
Yeah, like probably. I don't know.
If there is a parked car on the left, there is a chance some idiot's going to open the door and you're going to fall off your bike. You know, you're going to be. I think awareness, but that's the next bit. It's like you need to be you need to know the trees are there.
Yeah. You need to know why you're swerving left and right. Yeah. Like, you need to know. You don't ignore them. Like, you just visualize that.
That's why I think that's what I meant about the whole, you know, arriving in Mexico and doing a risk analysis. Like, okay, what can go wrong? So-and-so banged on about this. Okay, if that happens, what then? If that happens, what then? If all these scenarios that people have thrown at us. But I don't know, you know that... there are some people that whatever story you tell them, they will tell you something that's triggered in their minds that is a horrific story, or at least a negative. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm pregnant. Oh, sorry, maybe that's the next one. I'm not going to go that one. But, you know, like, oh, I am, great news, I'm getting married. I was married once. It was horrible. I got divorced. You know what I mean? It's like that kind of like, you know, I'm going to Mexico where people steal cars or whatever. You know, it's like they just cannot stop themselves from coming up with some sort of horrible story.
Yeah.
But then as I'm saying this, I'm reminded of that research that came out a couple of years ago, whenever it was, that talked about the fact that the conservative brain's response to something is always is a sort of fear-based response.
Mm.
Versus people who are more progressive, yeah, just aren't as afraid.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe that's why the world is a conservative place.
Really. Yeah. And so if it is fear, if it is that sort of slightly more primal, sort of like you got to protect yourself and survive mentality, that where you haven't quite realised that a lot of the things you're being told to be afraid of are pretty fictional and pretty overblown, and that if you could join us in the world, yeah, of thinking of navigating to a positive, to a more inclusive, to a more sort of prosperous future for everyone, then, you know, it's hard to do that if you're kind of like not even aware that you're in a pessimistic state of mind.
But I think it's very hard not to be afraid when you're, you know, earning a very basic income, yeah, or, you know, you're just constantly afraid. That's your most default people setting.
Yeah. But I think this, I do want to like go back to this lack of positive imagination as well, because it does take a certain base level of your needs catered for, right? To be able to, yeah, you know, like to have a good brainstorm, you have to have a nice meeting, you know, to have a room that you can sort of, there's coffee and there's a thing, you know, you can't if you're like worried about someone coming to stab you any second. No one's having a creative brainstorm on the battlefield. Like, so there's a bit of a hierarchy of needs thing going on there. But there's also just, I think it is harder. And do you know what? I was just going to tell you, like, this is kind of the thing that ended up being the last nail in the coffin for the whole Christianity thing for me, was they've put all this energy into what hell looks like. I've probably said this on the podcast, but all this imagination, revelations, and like there's all this detail about what's going to happen if you fail as a Christian kind of thing, doing all those things that involves. But there's not much on like what success looks like. What does heaven look like? No one knows. It seems a bit boring.
We've only got as far as St. Peter, haven't we, at the
gates? Yeah, so St. Peter, and that's sort of vaguely, I can think of Bill and Ted. There's famous people on clouds. There's like Bill and Ted's, Bogus Journey, a very good film, and everyone should watch it. It's great. Death. Actually, the new one was all right as well. They just, I was like, look, these scientists have come up with these crazy ideas about an immortal future, and all Christianity has to offer is, well, it'll be good for your whole life and you'll live forever. And it's like, as what? How? What does that look like? Who's going to be there? What is it?
I've never thought about it that way. This week I've had a few arguments in my own head about the fact that so my child's not going to be doing RE for now at school, mm-hmm, because it's run by nuns.
Okay.
And, you know, if I'm going to let my... If it was some sort of comparative religion thing, I'd be up for it, but mm-hmm, it's not. And
I was taught RE by nuns, and it was... They talked about Buddhism and stuff. They talked about some other things, but yeah.
I looked at the book, and it's all catechism and...
Oh, no.
Okay, and the word catechism, I've never even done it. It scares me.
You don't want your child learning about that.
So I was thinking about the argument in my head of like, I mean, if she realizes, because it's an optional subject, if she realizes that she's not doing it and everyone else is, and she wants to do it, then I'm going to go and talk to this nun and find out what she's like and what sort of nun she is. You know, I'm going to interview the nun, basically. And I was thinking, like, you know, why is that? Why do I care? Like, why does it matter? It's like, because I want my child to, I want to help shape my child's morality, and I want to do that without scaring her.
Hmm.
You know, when I ask her to share stuff with her friends, I don't want to, otherwise I'm going to beat you. Or, you know what I mean? That's the equivalent. I mean, be good or go to hell.
Doesn't
seem to me to be a very positive incentive for doing good things in the world or feeling good.
Yeah, the trouble is what we do see is Like, a lot of people won't... A lot of people, unless they're... I don't know. I'm just thinking about these mask mandates and things like that, and the fact that the rules and all those kinds of things. And it's sort of like, if you don't sort of tell people in no uncertain terms that they have to do a certain thing, they will wriggle out of it. Like, too many people will bloody wriggle out of it. And that's really depressing to me. It's like, why can't we just be cool?
But I think that's because not enough of us are, like you say, there is a hierarchy of needs thing where if you're afraid and you're just trying to protect yourself, it's very hard to think about other people, I think. And that's that's excusable.
Yeah.
I think, though, for those of us who are beyond that basic hierarchy of needs, we need to be forced to ask ourselves. Like the conversation I had earlier in the week with a friend, we were talking about the fact that right now we have to respect everybody's fear levels more. We have to be kind. You know, if you're not wearing a mask near me, you are scaring me, and that's not cool, that's not fair. You know, it's like it just isn't, and it's not an unfounded fear. It's not like, you know,
it's weird,
actual reasonable fear.
People are like losing their mind over Bill Gates is putting nanobots in me, but look at the actual numbers of people that are dying from actual COVID. We can demonstrate this. Look, hundreds of thousands of people, they're not scared of that, and it's like, what is wrong with you? Like,
my auntie person down the road was telling me that some of the old folk on the beach around here are sitting there talking about, you know, if you're chipped, you can, if you've been vaccinated, you should put a coin on your arm and you'll see it'll stick.
Oh, this one is happening.
That is real. That is a real conversation that is happening on the beach.
Amazing.
In the 21st century with people who, you know, have at least survived to be retired. So they must have some sense. You know, they're like, they achieved surviving in life, at least. You know, it's just ridiculous. And I can't help but that's mock worthy, I'm sorry.
Yeah, let's break and get into that a bit more because, What a lovely song. The Brexit vote, like, to come back to it, I've been, you know, the humanprogress.org, things seem bad, but actually, like, progress has been happening. You know, there's fewer people in poverty, fewer people dying in childbirth, but, you know, this has been improving for years. But that, and I just recorded an album that was essentially an optimistic album, and then the Brexit vote happened and the Trump thing happened, and it was like, it became very hard to muster that faith in humanity, that optimism at that point. It was a real challenge. And the only way I've been able to bring back any kind of optimism about humanity, I feel like you're reading an email.
I've just Googled human progress. Human
progress.
It's not the one I referred to.
I heard an alert, and then I was like,
"Oh no, that was my lunch is now in 10 minutes."
Okay, we better hurry. Yeah, what's the other one? Gapminder. Yeah.
I always refer to Gapminder. I hadn't heard of Human Progress. I shall look at it later. Thank you.
it was
hard
very
to maintain optimism.
the way that I have kind of rekindled. Probably a lower level of optimism. Well, and then along with the Brexit, the thing, it made you have to think about the people that aren't as privileged, and it made me kind of go, oh God, I'm fine because I'm privileged, but there's all these people that aren't. And it was like hard to be like happy about anything, to be optimistic about anything for a while there, because it really was hard to resist that feeling that things were just going into retrograde, going backwards again. But the way I've reconciled that in my brain is, it's like growing pains. It's not backwards, it's growing pains. As more and more people are treated as humans instead of as some sort of subhuman underclass, those people that were having a decent situation before that are sort of looking and going, hey, that's not fair. And because there's this idea peddled by conservatives that life is a zero-sum game and that only some people can win and everyone else has to lose. As I think, if it was an inevitable step towards progress, an inevitable sort of post-Obama thing, an inevitable, I don't know, hopefully it's just part of that progress. I mean, with Trump, I can see it. With Brexit, it's harder to see it that way because, I mean, if that was like a delayed effect of the financial crisis, like, or whatever it was, like, and it's a lot less, at least Trump's out, like, Brexit's only just starting.
I think that your sources of which is probably not surprising that you and I share some sources of optimism.
I disagree really with you. How can you say that?
I sort of agree with you, but for a slightly different lens. I don't know, but I just believe that. You know, I have to go back every so often to the fact that we are more educated en masse than we have ever been. Mm. I was talking to some people at a party recently and they were all being, oh, where's it all going to end? Where's it all going to end? I was like, my Croatian grandmother couldn't read and write. Mm. My Croatian grandfather, not my great-great-grandfather, yeah. Not my great-great-grandmother. My grandmother couldn't read and write. My grandfather was the only child of 8 who was sent to school. They chose a child to send to school so that he could learn to read and write, so they would have somebody who could read and write. Okay, my English side, I do have my grandfather was a pharmacist. My granny, I finished school. I don't think she was a counsellor, but she doesn't have a high level of education. You know, Nick's heritage is coal mining, but we are university educated. We are, and that's a generation.
Yeah.
Our daughter's going to start a step up from that. Like this is not. We have educated a huge number of people in the world, but only for a very short period of time.
Yes,
I think the Second World War has been the biggest shift in the world for increasing. I need to check the stats on this, but it's not generations and generations. It's incredibly recent. 100 years max, really. Yeah, then en masse we educate.
And all the civil rights stuff has been very, very recent.
So new,
feminism
so fresh.
Is barely getting going. Like
barely a toddler.
Yeah.
So I think these are reasons to have faith, to have optimism, to be hopeful. That like you can't. There are fewer of us that you can bullshit, or there are more of us who understand or can see more than there were 100 years ago.
There
50
are.
Years.
And I think what I was going to say is I think another part of this is because if it is a symptom of growing education, that there will be a bit of a Dunning-Kruger effect. There'll be a bit of that, a little knowledge. Realise everything you don't know. So, but if that's just a natural thing on the path to kind of like learning, and if we can become a bit more conscious that someone that's done a bit of Googling and watched a few YouTube videos thinks they have the whole picture on the vaccination conspiracy.
I think that's a great way of thinking of vaccine hesitancy. That's slightly less just wanting to shout inducing. It's like, okay, where you've got to is great. It's a step.
You're doing research. You're looking into things. You're not just blindly obeying authority. But, you know, there is a difference between... tests and research and things like that, and just someone's made a video that's full of lies. Yeah. I think we can try and be positive. I think there's always this idea that things are going to shit, and it's happened, and there's always been an apocalyptic kind of thinking at any stage of human history. There's always been this is going to be the end of the world. That now it's finally climate change is becoming that main thing that people are looking at as the end of the world. It's not like the white.
Sadly, it's a real thing, not a made up.
Yeah, but you know, it's we'll muddle through one way or another. Yeah, yeah. Like it's not we're not going to be eating each other's flesh and like walking around as zombies. It's going to be quite bad. But just as COVID, we've seen like a deadly airborne pandemic, global pandemic we've just lived through, and life kind of went on. You know, some things changed. Lots of people died. I'm not going, you know, like some people had it worse.
Living
but
through. That's my only
living through. Yeah, yeah, yeah. but this was kind of like the nightmare horror scenario. And we're, you know, we've come up with a vaccine in record time and we should be all right.
We've not like, turned into zombies yet.
It's not like, it's not even like Second World War levels of death. So we're sort of like, there is progress happening and there are reasons to be optimistic and there are reasons not to be quite as terrified of the state of things, and especially if that terror makes you behave in regressive ways, then that's where it is really, you know, the biggest problem. Sorry, I don't want to preach. This isn't supposed to be Michael and Vanka's preachy podcast. We're just trying to figure out what we think and summarize it.
Sometimes we can't help ourselves.
Yeah, sometimes we can't help ourselves. I want to do one more break and then I just want to just have a little dip into the subject of toxic positivity. So toxic positivity is an obsession with there's like, I like an optimist, but I, you know, it's hard to deal with someone that's sort of incessantly, I don't know, there's something about toxic positivity in people that are into crystals, you know, I don't know.
Well, you know, do you remember, have you ever come across an Amway salesperson?
No.
They kind of have this like same sort of thing as born again Christian types, which is like, I found the answer.
Yeah.
Like, I know. And they're kind of, their search has ended.
Yes.
And that's, I think that's the toxic positive. It's like, I've got the answer. It's this crystal. I've got the answer. It's this product. I've got the answer. It's this Christianity or this take on Christianity. It's like, I think that is I've stopped. I found the answer. Bit that I think is the toxic bit.
I think there's also often embedded in it is there an unacknowledged privilege to it as well. Like, I found the answer. It was this crystal, and it solved all of my problems. Yes, but your problems weren't. I have the wrong skin colour and people just sort of like prejudge me and generally don't want to hire me for things. Like, I'm looked at in a certain way by the police. That's positivity. Yeah. Oh, probably this policeman won't stop me and like make me like jump, like just dehumanise me for 10 minutes. Yeah, it doesn't work in that situation. Yeah. It is sort of bound to a little bit of like blindness to other people's perspectives.
I think that, I think there's a... there is, but I think like, but there's a difference. So I did. So the toxic positivity, I think, comes from, but there is a, that's how I've experienced it. That's how I visualize it. It's those kind of like a big smile on your face. Like, everything's fine. Everything's fine. It's like the Brexit flag bearer, you know, let's sort of cover it in British flags and then everything's going to be okay. And if you say anything bad, you're not being patriotic type stuff. That's the same sort of thing. It's like, we're British, everything's okay.
Brexit
now
is the answer.
Like, anyone who thinks they've got the answer to any question is Dunning-Krugering themselves. It's like, you know, it's like, okay, great, and what's next, you know, like,
and they label Project Fear, they label it as any like any sort of realistic concerns as being like, oh, you're just being negative and over, you know, is it toxic? I don't know. It was certainly toxic.
But I suppose it's not, but it's like everything will be okay. I think that's as well, that's blind optimism.
And like, so, exactly.
I am just going to be optimistic. Oh, don't worry, it'll be okay. That is, sorry, I can't even believe this taking an hour to realize. That's my most hated. Again, going back, I probably don't like that more than I don't like somebody telling me their horror story.
Right.
Don't worry, everything's going to be okay. Is it? Is it going to be okay? How do you know? What are you doing to make sure it's going to be okay? Have you thought about the things that are going to go wrong? What have you done to mitigate those things? That's my lead. Everything will be okay. Relax. You don't know.
Yeah, there's.
You don't know.
The blind optimism. That works for the blind to your own privilege as much as it does to the I'm going to ignore anyone giving me information that I don't like. There's a difference between ignoring all the negative ideas and sort of rationally kind of picking through those ideas and going, okay, well, this one I don't need to take seriously, this one I don't need to take seriously. You can do some research on each of them and just hopefully like kind of if people just look at it as probabilities and just make a graph and go, look, this is like this, and here's a thing you're not worried about that is a million times more likely to happen, and just try and like override the idea that because something's big it's, but yeah, like, but that's different to just blind that's putting your head in the sand and just because optimism isn't inaction. Optimism is acting towards a positive outcome that you've visualized, but you still need to work for it. You still need to work hard. You still need to think hard on it. But if you just kind of go, oh, it's just going to happen, it's going to turn out well, or if it's, oh, it's just going to turn out badly, then you're not really helping yourself there.
I don't think you've also understood your problem. I wonder, maybe this is a whole nother topic for a different subject. I was chatting to somebody, went, oh, you did engineering. Oh, that explains a lot. all engineers are weird. And he didn't really explain himself any further. But then I thought about it, it's like, I think inherently thinking about how to make something that, you know, does something means that you have to break it down. And I think there is a potentially a predisposition to breaking things into all the things that could go wrong and working out whether or not or how much you need to do to mitigate them. I think maybe it's a bit of a making things, you don't realize that you're used to doing that or you've trained yourself to do that perhaps, but anyway, go on.
The negative outcomes are a lot more obvious in when you're engineering something than when you're you can sort of take credit for something that, and this is I think why I've always been drawn to things where I can see I've successfully made this work, or because you can see when it's not working very clearly and you can see the bridge is collapsing. It's very obvious that the bridge collapsed. But a lot of people don't want to do that kind of work because it is so clear that when you're wrong and when you're right. And so if you're like, oh, I'm a marketing executive and I just improved sales of this product by 16%. I'm obviously not going to take into account anything else that was going on in the world at the time that I did this. It's just a lot easier to take credit either way, like when you're doing something a lot softer. So yeah, I can kind of see that.
Yeah.
Engineering.
Well, yeah.
So
that's my.
There we go.
I think I don't have any great. I think don't have any great ending to our story today, other than you've made me realise that I the optimism just takes a bit more. If you don't want to be blindly optimistic, it takes a little more effort.
It's important to make time to visualise a positive outcome. Like, it's important to, it's the five negatives are worth one positive thing, just in another form, isn't it? Like, you've just got to make time to kind of work on those, on what you actually want. And I think what I've noticed the most is I think there is a hierarchy of needs aspect to all of this, where if your kind of base level needs aren't met, then it's very hard to find time to picture some sort of positive future. And that's something that, can I mention universal income, universal basic income? Because it would let everyone have a lot more of a, be given an opportunity to think positively and create more opportunities, and the world could just start getting a lot better. And then, well, that'd be great. Can we just make every week about universal basic income? Okay, bye! No, I'm just going to play the end music. Right, let's do it. Thanks for listening. If you like the podcast, go to grandpodcast.com. Subscribe. There's a subscribe button on there that should launch your podcast app, and you won't miss an episode. Where can people find you on the internet, Ivanka?
People can find me at Ivanka on Twitter.
At Ivanka.
At Ivanka.
Ivanka. And you can find me at Michael Forrest on Twitter, and come and find my camera app, clean.camera. Come and find my... Do you like plugging things into other things? Come and find me on squares.tv, where I'm interviewing people that are doing crazy stuff. And that will be it for this week. We do have a Patreon.
Yes.
Someone joined my Michael Forrest Patreon, one of my new friends.
Did they?
Yeah. This morning I was like, $3? Ooh, that's nice. And that just goes to show, doing a bit of play turns into that. I just need to focus on the play and stop focusing on the make a new bloody app every 5 minutes. It's not a new app. I've already figured out the hard bits. Yeah, but you've got to do a new framework and you've got to use it to stop it, Michael. We will we'll see you next time. So I hope you're having a good time. Feel free to reach out. We're live every Friday morning on twitch.tv/Michael Forrest. But again, that's on the grandpodcast.com. hello@grandpodcast.com if you want to send us an email. Okay, see you soon. Bye 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 bye.